Hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, a podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other basic questions and give each other acidic answers. I am a writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, author of How to Fight Presidents, the book, and the co-host of this podcast, and also a person who in middle school decided his thing was going to be that he liked French fries a lot, Daniel O'Brien, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say
hello. Hey everybody, I'm Soren Bowie. I'm a writer, performer, Emmy Awards watcher, and no owner of many arrowheads that I found and then just left in what I like to call the Desert Museum.
Oh, hey, where do you find these arrowheads?
The northwest corners of like Arizona, northeast corner of New Mexico, like Shiprock area, Navajo Reservation. A lot of old flint knaps and arrowheads left over from like the Anasazi. So these things are ancient.
Oh. And how do you, is that a thing that you just, forgive my ignorance, you just come across them in like the sand?
You
or
can.
Are you going into a cave?
Yes. Rarer that you find them in the sand. It's not unheard of. But yeah, you go into old ruins and you can find some pottery in there. A lot of it's just kind of like pottery shards. But you can find arrowheads in there, but the idea is that you can pick it up, you can look at it, and then you put it back and you don't take it home.
Why is that?
It's grave robbing, basically.
Oh, that makes sense. This is like the Jersey-ass public school version of real adventures, where we would go to sites that were specifically set up in New Jersey as like field trips. And you would learn a lot about Native American culture there, and you would do like projects together. You would put together a longhouse, you know, a bunch of middle schoolers or like maybe fourth or fifth grade putting together a longhouse. And then they're like, great, you did that and you learned a little bit about this culture, and now you're gonna go and you're gonna dig in this area that we've set aside and see if you find anything. And it was rigged, which I didn't know. I didn't know that it was rigged, but like you dig in there and I was like, holy fucking shit, I found an arrowhead. And they're like, that's very good. Yeah, now I'm going to talk to you about the arrowhead. And I was like, this is so cool. I'm the one who found it. And they're like, yeah, okay, now give that back. Because the next field trip is coming in 35 minutes. And some Mark from that school needs to find it next.
Some Rube. So the Anasazi ruins that I'm going to. First of all, like the... it's just this lattice work of canyons all over that area, and it's a maze of stuff. You could spend your whole life exploring there and not see every single ruin that's there, and some of them have been lost for a very long time and haven't been seen in there's not like great directions on how to get there, but there's like accounts of somebody finding them at one point or another. But you go to a lot of these places and there's just tons of old stuff. I mean, you'll always find the normal stuff like this petrified corn and everything, but then you're also going to find some pottery. We've been one before where we found bracelets and necklaces made out of like yucca and human hair, and a lot of flint knaps, which are the what they're chipping off of the flint to get an arrowhead, or like obsidian knaps, which are what they make most of them out of. They're like black glass. It's like what dragon glass is based off of.
Sure.
And
you chose the right thing to make this accessible to me.
And we found human remains in there too, which is crazy. Wow. Yeah, you can find like femurs and things like that. So there's some bad juju around it. I don't know how much you believe in that kind of thing, but especially with the Anasazi, the reason you don't touch anything is because you want to preserve it for other people. You want other groups to be able to see with this piece of history, but also because there's like rumors that if you take something, it just curses you. And that's it for you.
Is there now, how accessible is this land? Is this something that like I could stumble upon one day and just like wander into these ruins and find stuff and take stuff? And if so, are there like signs that warn people not to take things?
The answer,
because like I wouldn't know if I wasn't talking to you right now. I might just take a trip to Arizona one day and realistically get drunk and fuck off into the desert and then be like, oh shit, look at this, a femur, that's gonna look great at my home. But I wouldn't do that if there was a sign that was like, hey, leave the femurs.
There are no signs
where they are.
There are no signs, but
oh, no.
It depends on where you are. So like the stuff that you'd actually stumble into in an afternoon, or like Mesa Verde, or like places, Chaco Canyon, that are like these places are established. This is where the Anasazi were, and there's like roped off areas. You're not allowed in the kivas, like which are like these little ceremonial holes, and you're not allowed in any of the rooms or anything like that. You'd have to really go, it'd have to be intentional for you to go find these ones that are not blocked off at all, where you could just walk in there. It's like mud, all of it's made out of clay inside these canyon walls to like give you an idea of it. There are little chipped out areas in the rock for footholds and handholds where they would climb up into these caves in the walls of the canyons. And then in there are these mud cities. There's houses, kivas, all kinds of stuff up there that is all packed in with mud and rock and straw. And you can go up there and you can actually like see their handprints. You can put your hand into one of their handprints. And these, you know, this stuff was made in like 900 AD. So it feels very historic, more historic than anything else in the United States.
Right. Well, listen, that's all fascinating when I'm feeling small and inadequate.
Thanks to Skillshare for supporting Quick Question. Break up the routine of a day spent indoors, explore workshops, classes, and more in topics like graphic design, illustration, productivity, and entrepreneurship. Get 2 free months of premium membership at Skillshare.com/QQ. That's 2 free months of membership at Skillshare.com/QQ.
So let's pivot right into the thrust of the show. We like to ask each other questions, but before that, we've been doing this quarantine check-in. Do you have any updates? It's okay if you say
I do.
No. Oh, yeah, okay. That's even better. I lied before.
I went to San Luis Obispo and I saw my brother and his family, and my kid finally got to play with some other kids.
That's great. Did your I don't mean to put your brother on the spot. Did he fly?
No. So my brother doesn't
really
live in New York anymore. Yeah.
Oh,
they
okay.
moved. This is basically where we went was halfway between his place and our place. So it was a drive for both of us, but it was only like 3.5 hours. And then both families, the 2 weeks leading up, just didn't go out at all. Didn't like interact with anybody. Didn't go get groceries. Didn't do any of that stuff. And then we met there. We knew we were clean. In fact, they got his wife got a test before they mm-hmm. came, and we should have done the same thing. We didn't, and so we knew with pretty good confidence that both families were COVID negative. And then we got to hang out for the weekend on this lake, and it was the best thing.
I'll bet. That sounds really great. And I bet Ronan was pumped.
Oh, so excited. And it was just something to look forward to. And that's like, it sounds silly, but I just needed something to look forward to.
Yeah. I felt that way. I have a driving trip coming up, but this past week I went jet skiing. I rented a jet ski as part of a tour to just go to like the drive right up to the Statue of Liberty and right up to the Brooklyn Bridge, and then just be out on the water for an hour. And it's a very simple thing, but it was still it was so different from what I'm used to, which has been picking one of the 4 different places in my apartment to sit.
Right.
That it was, I was like truly laughing like a supervillain while going fast on a jet ski. Because I'm going very fast, and I'm outdoors, and I'm getting splashed with water, and the sun is on me, and it's been so long since any of that has happened that I I'm also like realizing in the moment, it's like, oh, I can be really loud and no one's gonna be mad at me because it's not an apartment. So that's when I was like, ha 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 ha, like a truly insane person just laughing on a jet
like
ski.
An unpracticed villain who like didn't have a laugh worked out yet. And was like gonna workshop some things.
Right. I was like, is this do I sound evil or like would you not fear me, Batman? Ha 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 ha. On paper it sounds the same. I also learned because they, you know, you do like basic verbal training in advance of the jet ski, and they were like, have you ridden a jet ski before? And I was like, yeah. Which is true. When I was 12, I rode on the back of a jet ski that my brother drove. But it's one of those things that I just, with no investigation, was like, I bet I'm good at that. And I was so bad early on. Like, bad enough within the as soon as you are allowed to hit the throttle, because you start in, like, a no-wake zone, you're not allowed to, like, put too much gas into it, I guess, because you're being safe. As soon as we got past that point and you're allowed to go fast, I'm watching everyone zooming forward and I'm just jerking wildly everywhere. And like enough that one of the helpers had to come back and talk to me. And I'm bizarrely like mad, I guess, at the universe. Like, I don't think it's my fault. When the helper gets there, I say, why am I bad at this?
What's his answer?
Her answer was, look, you just need to relax. And that just also sent me off. I was like, everyone says that to me. That can't be the solution to all of my problems. We need to think of something else because I'm not going to relax.
So listen, fix your jet ski. Not fix the happening. Water. There's got to be another way. I found a workaround for everything else in my life. Give me the one for this. So why were you jerking around?
She was right. I mean, the thing was, I would go too hard on the throttle too early, and I would also like, if I veered in any one direction that I didn't like, I would overcorrect by turning it to the left or the right. And like, if you overcorrect to the left, then it's like, well, no, now I'm going in a circle, so I need to like fix this really quick with the right. And that was too hard too. So she was, her advice was correct. It's still just like you don't need to, you're not fighting the thing. You just keep a steady hand on the throttle and don't jerk it too wildly and you'll be fine. And eventually I did that and things were better. But for a while, I was like, this is my relaxing thing!
No, forgive me for not knowing this, because I don't come from water people. What's the difference mm-hmm. between a wave runner and a jet ski?
I have no idea.
Okay. And were you standing up or sitting down?
I was sitting down the whole time, which is another thing I learned about riding a jet ski in your 30s, is just like the different parts of my body that are sore the next day, which is surprising, because I feel like I was sitting the whole time. And meanwhile, like the woman who was leading us was standing on one foot on the jet ski with her other foot back behind her in a fancy yoga pose to show off. Oh. And I sat for an hour and woke up the next day and was like, oh, well, this isn't going to be a workout day because my ass, legs, and back are too sore from sitting down for an hour.
Was it your lower back that was sore?
Yeah, yes. I
think probably you're getting rocked around a lot out there on the water,
yeah,
because you're like riding through other people's wakes and things like that.
Yeah, certainly.
And so now this is also like under the Brooklyn Bridge and stuff, right?
Yeah. And what's and we also we get to the we saw the Statue of Liberty from a bunch of different angles, and then we get behind it.
Nice.
And the leaders were like, this is our final stop, and a lot of people jump off their jet skis and go into the water. There aren't a lot of people in the world who can say they swam behind the Statue of Liberty. And everyone was apprehensive, and I'm like immediately taking off the thing that is chaining me to the jet ski, and like not even waiting to find out if this is a bit or not, and topple myself over the jet ski into the water because I was so excited to be in water. And it was like such a simple pleasure for someone who's been cooped up inside to just be like, ah, I haven't felt cold ocean water on my body in so long. And like you really take for granted any different sensation that you haven't been around for a while.
Yeah, I think that I'm just saying that with my own child. When we went to San Luis Obispo, we went to like the beach for a little bit, and he hadn't been near the ocean in a while, and it was like, it was really fucking him up a little bit. And I was like, oh yeah, you haven't had the exposure in a while. You don't know these senses anymore. But Dan, that's Brooklyn water, and like New York water, that's okay, right? You're not getting gangrene from that.
No.
Okay.
I mean, we'll see. I don't know.
Those are shipping lanes, though, right?
Yeah.
I've been on a ferry from Liberty Island. Is it Liberty Island or Staten Island? No.
Liberty Island. Wait, what? I mean, like, they're both
where
things.
The Statue of Liberty is.
Liberty, the Statue of Liberty is on Liberty Island.
So I've taken the ferry from Liberty Island to Battery Park and back and forth. And I can say that I've looked down in the water and thought, I don't want to swim in that. That was water you just jumped in, no problem?
Absolutely.
Oh, great. Okay.
Felt great. No regrets.
Good.
Folks, we love doing this show, and if you want to support us, there are a couple of ways you can do that. One of them is, of course, telling your friends to listen to and download the show. And another one is to show some love to our sponsors. And this week, we are talking about one of our favorites, Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community with thousands of inspiring classes for creative and curious people. You can explore new skills, deepen existing passions and get lost in creativity. It feels kind of hooky booky to talk about creativity as self-care, but I've certainly found it very useful, just like using this time being stuck indoors to learn new skills. Certainly is basically a form of meditation for me, and I know that I'm gonna eventually come out of this quarantine having a bunch of new skills, and in the short term it certainly staves off boredom. You also made a community of people with similar interests, and Skillshare is perfect for that. They offer creative classes designed for real life and all the circumstances that come with it. These lessons can help you stay inspired, express yourself, and introduce you to a community of people in the millions that share your same interests. Skillshare offers membership with meaning. There's so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives. Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. They have classes that fit your schedule and skill level. That's very important to me because my schedule is wild with work and with doing this podcast at strange days and strange hours. So I like that I can fire up Skillshare whenever I want. And if you're a member, you get unlimited access to thousands of inspiring classes with hands-on projects from a community of millions. Skillshare is also incredibly affordable, especially when compared to pricey in-person classes and workshops. An annual subscription is less than $10 a month. Personally, I have been using a Skillshare class. We've talked about a bunch of classes that we've done in the past, but lately I've been taking this class from a user named Emily Henderson. It's Style Your Space, Creative Tips and Techniques for Interior Design. That's in their lifestyle section. And it's all about rearranging the space of my apartment. And I know that sounds corny, but when you've been sitting in the same couple of spots in your place for several months, you get a little bit antsy. And this class about rearranging your space with intention and creativity has really opened up a lot of options for me in my apartment. So I really like that. I think you should check it out. And again, we've talked about photography. We've talked about sign language classes. We've talked about music theory classes. They have just about everything at Skillshare. And I really enjoy that I can train with very skilled professional experts to learn new skills and crafts. And you should too. Explore your creativity and get 2 free months of premium membership at Skillshare.com/QQ. 2 free months? That's 2 whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started and join today by heading to Skillshare.com/QQ. That's 2 free months of unlimited access to thousands of classes at Skillshare.com/QQ. One more time, because I love this URL, Skillshare.com/QQ. Let's get into the show now, though. Soren, I have a quick question for you.
Shoot.
And as always, I have many caveats. I want, because this could get personal, and I want you to be completely honest with me and not spare my feelings. Because it's going to be fine. It's in the past. It doesn't matter. There's a wedding. You're a single person. You get an invite to the wedding with a plus one. Am I really supposed to use that plus one if I'm not in a relationship? And I'm bringing this up to you because I brought a friend to your wedding. And I genuinely want to know the etiquette. It's a lot of this was born out of I've been rewatching New Girl in the mornings when I have my morning coffee, and there's like a whole season where they have a bunch of weddings, and there's like a sitcom trope thing about you get a plus one for a wedding if you're a single guy, then you bring someone that you think you can impress by having them at a wedding and then parlay that into sex with that person.
Yeah,
that's not what I did. I've never used a wedding as like a date kind of thing. I've always used my plus one at a wedding as like, this is a person that I know will be fun at a wedding because they're a fun person, and like I can rely upon them to get up and dance and do things. And like the woman I brought to your wedding, the two of us, we've been to 6 weddings together, and because we just like have fun at weddings and we're good at weddings. But I'm now in my head about it that like, am I not supposed to do that? Because I, in my 20s, I figure like, oh, I've got a plus one. They wouldn't have given that to me if they didn't want me to use it. And I'm going to use it. and bring someone that I know I will have fun with. But am I wrong about this, Soren?
Hold on. Let me get this straight. You came to my wedding and
yeah.
You stayed in a bell tower that a bat also lived in and you didn't get laid?
No.
That does not surprise you at all.
We didn't want to. The bat didn't seem to approve.
The haunted hotel that I made you stay in with a bat in your room?
I stayed in the bell tower with a bat, and like when we checked into our bell tower,
sexy.
I went down to the front desk and I was like, "Hey, I don't know if you know this, but there was a bat outside of our room." And they were like, "He's back." I thought, "Oh, okay. He's the ranking member in this suite now. That's fun."
Yeah, it was a very rustic experience at my wedding. So let me give you a little peek behind the curtain of planning a wedding before I answer your question. You start making your invite list and you start going with the people that you need to invite, and then you get to the people you want to invite second. Because for obvious reasons, it's mandatory for those first people. A lot of those people that first part that you need to invite are not people you actually want there. They're like distant family members that your parents would be hurt if you didn't invite. And so you've got this like group of people who are like not really your buddies. Some of them you haven't seen in over a decade. And you want to invite just your friends and have it be a big fun experience that you're going to remember forever. But you also just like, there's this looming threat of aunts and uncles on you. And
right. You know that if you don't invite Fran from work, that's going to be a real problem for your mom.
Right.
And that'll never go away.
So you're once you've figured out that negotiation, what you'll generally do is you'll get to the people that you know you have to invite, the people you really, really want to invite, and then you have this other tier of people that are like people you'd also really like to be there, but you can't justify it. And you have your number of like whatever, how many guests you've got. You've got like 80, 120. And like what you've got to do then, and this is the secret that a lot of people do, is they will send out the invites to the first group. They'll wait and see which people send back invites, send back the notifications that they can't come. Then you've got your second tier that you can go to because now you've got more space. That's why invites go out so early for weddings. Also because, you know, you want to be so far out in advance that people don't have anything on their calendar. But this is a big part of it. And so if somebody, and you give a plus one to everybody because it would be weird to send it to single people and be like, oh, by the way, you can't bring anyone, especially if they don't know anyone else at the wedding. You want them to have somebody there that they're also going to have fun with.
Right.
So you send out to the first group, you get that information back. And then based on that, you invite how many people you can from the second. And if somebody sent back a thing that said, I'm not using my plus one, that's a good news for the people, but it doesn't necessarily, mean that that's what they want. So like for instance, at my wedding, you knew two other people, maybe three, which is not a lot. And so you bring somebody that you also really like, we want you to do that. Like we want it to be that kind of experience. So I will say that if you bring somebody, that's what they expect. If you don't bring somebody, that's icing on the cake for them.
Okay. That's good to know. I feel okay about this. I've certainly never done the thing that Ted on How I Met Your Mother does, where it's like he gets an invite, he's single, and he just blindly says plus one on the hopes that he will start a relationship between sending back the RSVP and the actual wedding date, because that seems shitty to me.
Yeah, it also fucks up the count. If they don't come, then you've got it ends up being weird at the table distribution and stuff like that.
It's a strange, like the context that I hadn't thought of it in was what's coming up with in these New Girl reruns right now, where they're talking specifically about like wedding photos, where it's like, oh good, here's my sister and brother-in-law, here are all my friends, and here's Daniel's friend from college or whatever, you know, like just this person who is going to be part of your wedding photo album. I don't know if you've got any pictures of her in your wedding photo album, but that's the thing that I am now hyper conscious of a couple 30 years later, going through their photos and being like, oh yeah, he met her at a bar and thought it would be a fun spontaneous date to bring her to our fucking wedding.
I think first of all, she won't be in a lot of the pictures. There are going to be people at your wedding that you don't know anyway. And if you're, I mean, I think I know you pretty well. I think you're probably pretty great at weddings. I think that that would be a really good opportunity for you to showcase your best self. So I wouldn't begrudge you if you chose to do something like that. I don't think anybody would.
All right.
Oh, but I do have a question for you. And this is not one of my original quick questions, but the next time you, I don't know if you've noticed yet, but for your brothers, if you get to look at any of the wedding photos that are on their walls or whatever in their houses, see if you can, if there's somebody in one of those pictures that's like no longer part of their life at all, because we have one. I think probably everybody does. A sibling has a significant other who's not, they're not married or whatever. And then all of a sudden that person a month later is just gone.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly know that information.
But Dan, I do have a quick question for you if we're through on the wedding talk.
The only thing I was going to do, because I don't have a whole lot more meat for this episode, if there's any other wedding etiquette things that you have, just because like it's not a thing that's really taught. I feel like any time that I, the first time that I was invited to a like an engagement party, I just went, and like it was a family related thing, and I was like, oh, that's cool, I'll wear a nice shirt. And I was in college at the time, and my parents like bought a bonus gift off the registry for me to give, because they were like, this is what you're supposed to do at engagement parties, and we didn't know if you were going to do it or not. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, these glasses are from me, I fucking guess, I don't know. But that's the thing that I found out just from like the actual doing of it. It's not a class anywhere. So everything else that I know about weddings is just stuff that I've tried to piece together from accidentally knowing when to ask the right questions and just like learn by doing, essentially.
Yeah, there's
like how much you're supposed to give if you're giving money and all the etiquette surrounding that kind of nonsense.
Yeah, I think it all depends on how old you are too, but there's definitely some tacit wedding etiquette that nobody ever talks about and that only comes up on the day. One is this one that seems so simple, and when you have somebody who knows what they're doing and they actually do it, you're like, oh yeah, of course. When the bride comes down, everybody stands up, and you don't sit down until the person at the front says, everybody be seated. And
right.
But if you don't have somebody to lead that, it's chaos. It's like some people stand up halfway down while she's halfway down the aisle. Some people do that little hover over their seat, like, oh yeah, okay.
My move is I like to walk with the bride when she starts coming down, because they, I don't know if you've been to a wedding in a while, the brides are so slow.
Yeah, you just push her along a little bit. Look, follow my pace.
Yeah, look at this. Bop, 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 bop. You know?
I know that dress has enough give to it that you can make these big strides with me. And then you just stand there and you wait till the person at the front says, be seated. They're going to tell you what to do after that point. But stand up. As soon as you hear the music, you stand up, you turn around. Then you wait. then you sit down. And like when people don't get it right, it drives me crazy at weddings. Another one is if you are young, you stay till the end. If you're like an older family member, or like you're not of that generation, you're clearly not on the same team, then you're allowed to leave early. In fact, it's highly encouraged.
Yeah.
That's
the thing that I feel like I learned from the woman that I brought to your wedding, because she, separate from being a person I've known for a very long time, she professionally makes cakes, often wedding cakes, and like has worked at wedding venues and has been around weddings for so many years of her life, that was like, we are in our 20s. That means that we're partying, we're dancing, we're not like going crazy or anything like that, but like you want this to feel like a very long fun party for the bride and groom, where people are smiling and dancing, and there are pictures that when you look back on them, it looks like everyone is having the greatest time in their lives, which very often they are.
Yes You don't want to be in a situation where, you know, like you throw a birthday party, people are going to bounce in and bounce out, and that's sort of expected, and you know that's how it goes. But a wedding feels so final. It hypothetically should be this one day in your life where you do this, and you want the people around you to feel like they're having a good time. And so if they're like ready to go as soon as dinner's over, you're a little bit hurt, You won't say it or anything, but you're like, what? You're okay. This isn't fun for you. I get it. Okay, go. So you want people to stick around and you want them to feel like they couldn't possibly leave. Like, no way. This is the best day of my life too. This is so much fun. And that's the ambiance that you create for the bride and groom. Like, that's your job there. And when you're young.
Yeah. Now I'm regretting a wedding that I went to again with the same person. I'm telling you, man, 6 weddings. We're a good team. I was a senior in college. We went to a wedding, and we stayed for a good amount of time, but we didn't close the place down, and neither of us drank too much because we had to drive, because we'd already got tickets to see Spider-Man 3 on opening night. And I was like, this wedding is great, but like, it's opening night, you understand, for the third, and I'm gonna guess, best Spider-Man movie. It's got Thomas Hayden Church. He was nominated for an Oscar last year, for crying out loud.
It's got the Venom storyline. How could it be bad?
It's finally got Venom.
How is anyone ever in the world going to make a bad Venom movie? I'd feel a little jilted at that.
Sure.
But that's also it's your job as a bride and groom to set up a scenario in which people do want to stay. Like, you build an environment that's going to be fun for people. And if you don't, then you should understand that somebody would rather see Spider-Man 3 than stay any longer at your wedding.
Right. Which, you guys did a great job for your wedding. You made it impossible for anyone to leave and see Spider-Man 3.
We really did make it impossible. So we took over a small town that was out in the middle of the woods that didn't have cell phone reception. So no one could be calling you to be like, let's go do something else. And you're just kind of stuck there. And that's by design.
It was really great because you knew that everyone you saw in this town was here for this wedding. There was like no one who was like, no, I'm the local murderer or whatever. I don't know. Everyone who was staying there was like, it was just wedding town USA somehow.
Yeah. And I think that what really helped it, and this was fortuitous in a way that I didn't anticipate at the time, was that the first night, the barbecue that we had in lieu of a rehearsal dinner where everyone was invited, it just, this torrential rain and lightning, and it was outside, and everyone had to huddle in this tiny little gazebo, and people who didn't know each other are shoulder to shoulder, chest to chest, just like, oh, hi, okay, how do you know them? And there's an icebreaker right there. And then after that, it was like they'd shared really trauma. They'd all survived this thing together.
It also cleared up. It didn't rain the entire night. Like,
no, but it was certainly, there was a period of time where you could not be outside.
Yeah.
And so everyone was forced into this little wooden gazebo. And then after that, everyone was like, it's like everybody knew each other after that. Now we have this shared experience together. We did this thing that was very intimate, and that's sort of funny. We're strangers and we did this intimate thing. And now it's the vibe is different. Everybody feels like they know each other. And it really helped out.
Great wedding, Soren.
Thank you. That's the other thing. And you do a very good job of this, Daniel. Is anytime that the wedding comes up after the wedding, you always say, that's the best wedding I've ever been to.
Listen, man, I got family listening to this. You can't reveal all of my secrets, buddy.
I'm just saying, you've done that for me a lot. And I'm sure I see through it, but that's like, I want that. I want to hear that. I want you to do that. I want you to come up with like a little vignette of like what happened and like, oh, this is my, I like this part. And best wedding I've ever been to. And that's what people want to hear. We, after our wedding, had some family who, or friends of Colleen's parents who, sent us a text that was like basically begrudging the fact that they had to travel so far for this thing. And immediately we were like down on ourselves. We were like, we shouldn't have done it here. This was a bad idea. We forced everyone to go there. We shouldn't have done this. And then what we need is the positive reinforcement. Everybody regrets something about their wedding, but if everyone around them is telling them, no, honestly, it's the best wedding I've ever been to, you're like, okay, yeah, it was worth the 20 to 100 grand that I spent on it.
Right. If I have one regret at your wedding, it's that our former boss, Jack, kept making fun of me because I used my iPad 3 to take pictures because I didn't have a digital camera or a phone on my camera. Like, iPad 3 was the most exciting thing that I bought for my life at the time. So I was like, look, it's a camera that I could take anywhere and it goes on the internet.
And
I
was, it calls me Big Dragon.
It calls me Big Dragon. And I was so excited to have a camera slash internet device that was, you know, no question, 10 inches long. And when you're a guy standing close to the front row holding up what looks like a modestly sized book to take pictures of a bride, sure, Jack's going to throw some shit at you.
Yeah, that's fair.
But the pictures were great.
That's good. I'm glad that you got good photos of my wedding. I'd love to see those someday. They're more for me.
I don't know how to get them onto like the actual computer, you know? They're just on the iPad computer.
Yeah. Sounds expensive to move them. but yeah, I talk your ear off about weddings. I could tell you all the mistakes we made too along the way that I'd be like, oh, this is what you just should do in your wedding. What we
in planning it? In planning it or in weddings that you attended?
No, that we messed up. I don't go with an eye for judgment when I go to other weddings. I love weddings. And I will
too.
Just go and I will just have a good time there. I just have these things from my own wedding where I can like look back on and be like, shouldn't have done that. Ooh, we should have done that.
I mean, you can say them. This is I can't stress enough how unprepared I am for this podcast.
We did our kiss was really, really quick. Because we felt like people were
hold
just
on,
like,
hold on. Let me pull up my iPad.
Let's see.
Oh yeah, that's. It looked like you were, like that was a test run. It looked like that. She had like.
Yeah.
You were trying to get lint off her face, and you couldn't use your hands for some reason.
Yeah,
you were
trying to
like
blow
get it
away.
Out of there real quick. Yeah.
Yeah. We did a very just short kiss. And then afterwards, like people commented on it. I was like,
really?
Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, we're supposed to, I mean, we had been together for 11 years before we got married.
Is that the people, I'm so sorry. The people who commented on that, is that?
It's like a good natured ribbing.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out like what is the tier of intimacy of a friend?
Yes.
Where you would accept them saying, "Hey, great wedding, one note. Really milk it next time."
They're saying things like, "Are you sure this is something you really want to do?" Like it was a ribbing. It was like, "Oh, that you had to touch her. Gross." because all we did was like a little peck and then we were down the aisle again. Mm-hmm. We were just like moving things along. And if I had to do it over again, I would put a little more pageantry into it.
Mm-hmm. Is that so? This is again. I am tragically unmarried, and I've just
let me check Celebdater. Hold on.
My only experience at weddings is being a hit at all of them, officiating one of them, best man at two, and just really, really planning for one. So forgive me if this is a dumb or too intimate question, but in the Adam Sandler, Drew Barrymore, Two Hander, the Wedding Singer, there's a whole discussion about what kind of kiss they're going to do in the ceremony. Is that a common thing, or do you just wing it, or what?
I don't know. We winged it, and that's maybe the problem. I assume other couples must do that. If you're going to do 2 months of dance lessons just to do like a very slow foxtrot together, yeah, you'd probably plan the kiss too.
Yeah, it seems like a very strange thing to be like, all right, this is the kiss that everyone's going to be looking at. What do we want to do with it?
Yes.
I mean, like for me, because I come from a comedy background, we'll do one as written and then like one fun one. One that's just for us.
One where I put bunny ears behind your head as we're kissing. Oh, that'll get a laugh. Yeah, I think maybe if I had it to do over again, it's a very narrow line to walk because you don't want it to also be too like lusty.
Right.
You don't want it to be too short and you don't want it to be too lusty. You want it to seem like, ah, now that's love. And that's a hard note to hit. We didn't even try though. We basically opted out.
Which is fine. Cause I think going too hard in the other direction is like, I've been at weddings where I felt like I was seeing something that I'm not supposed to see. That was like, they're getting like horned up right now. Oh no, I shouldn't be here for this.
This is This is very troubling for me to see. Am I getting horned up? And then, like, we almost didn't have a dance floor. We almost had people dance on brick, which is basically where this tent, where the
ceremony dance on. Was. I remember you telling me about this. You wanted everyone to dance only to the song "Brick" by Ben Folds Five.
Yeah,
you wanted that. It was you would break it up at one point when the cake came out. You would do "Happy Birthday," but then otherwise it was wall to wall brick.
Well, DJs are so expensive, you see.
Yeah.
So if you just get your own iPad. I mean, what's your thing called, Dan? Your iPad?
iPad 3?
iPad 3. Get your own iPad 3. You put the song on there,
mm-hmm.
and then you put it on repeat. There, you can do
that. Yeah, there's a button. You could just loop it over and over again. And you listen to it. Doesn't cost any extra.
We almost had a brick dance floor, which would have just been a nightmare. And we realized it not until like the last week. And then we very, in a rushed way, ordered a dance floor that could be installed there. I've been to weddings before where you're like, you're dancing on, they'll do like a warehouse wedding or something like that. And then you're dancing on concrete and it just feels different. You can't move around the same way. You can't do your slides.
I know I'm going to hate this answer. Do you remember what that dance floor cost?
No. I want to say, just off the top of my head, I want to say $250, but I can't.
Oh, I don't hate that at all.
Yeah, it was really reasonable. The difference between folding plastic chairs and like vinyl chairs, which you don't think there's a huge upgrade there in texture, crazy upgrade in terms of price.
Ugh.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways that they get you at weddings. But that's Let's a whole see. Other thing.
Anything else about Soren's wedding? Your vows were great. I remember. It's weird. It's the kind of thing that I would feel tremendous pressure doing anytime I've been asked to speak at anything for family. I feel very weird about it because I'm asked because of a background in public speaking and a background in comedy writing.
Yeah.
So there's a weird feeling of pressure of making it funny. But also not making it too funny so that it becomes a stand-up routine. And I have been to weddings where the vows were very much like, oh, this is a tight seven about their relationship, and I do not like it.
Yeah, it's not for her. This is just like, this is somebody now turning to the rest of the crowd going, what else? What else?
I love her so much. Anyway, let's say, who's from out of town? Who's from out of town? Who came the farthest? Oh, wow, Nova Scotia. Okay.
Don't have anything for Nova Scotia. Who here is from Cincinnati?
But you struck a very good balance of like, this is an entertaining speech to, I mean, like, entertaining might not be the right word, but this is like a captivating and enjoyable speech to watch, which also had lots of heart and sincerity to it.
Thank you. Yeah, they're very hard to write. But in the end, you're like, yes, I think this is what I want to say. And then it makes you love the other person a lot more because you actually have to sit down and articulate what you like about them.
Was that the hardest thing you had to write, do you think?
No, I, so yeah. my... I once had to write a column, Dan. It was very hard to write, but also as I was doing it, it started to feel very natural and good because a lot of the stuff that you talk about in that are already jokes that the two of you have. And what you don't realize about that necessarily is that they're like, that shit's already polished because you've done it so much. Like you tell the same, when you have an inside joke, your only job then is making it accessible to other people. So that the rest of the crowd isn't lost. For us, it was like orangutans. Like there was a very big thing about how my wife is very environmentally minded and orangutans made a big impact on both of us apparently because so much of the deforestation that happens in Borneo is because of the peanut butter industry or like the palm oil industry. And it came up in both of our speeches.
Right. It's so far the only wedding I've been to where both vows independently mentioned orangutan.
And as long as it means something to the other person and it's accessible for the audience, then I feel like you can't go wrong. It's also everybody's like they want to be on your side already. It's not like stand up where you're people are like, oh, what's this chuckle fuck got to say? Like people, they all know you. They all want you to do well. And so it's a very forgiving audience. The hardest one that I had to write was for another wedding, which was my one of my best men or groomsmen, Dan Campana, had just like this killer speech at my wedding. It was funny.
It was great. Dan Campana, a friend of the show, once again, he's come up a bunch of times. He designed our logo, and we mentioned him last week for some other reason. I can't remember why.
But he gave this like great speech at my wedding. Clearly, like, he put a ton of time into it. He asked me to speak at his wedding too. And then he made me the anchor. He was like, oh, you're going to be speaking last. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And so I spent so much time working on that, because I also knew on the day everyone who had been to both weddings would be like, what are you gonna do for Dan? How are you gonna top that? And I was like, well, obviously I have to, because this is my job. And so I worked really, really hard on that one, and then got to the point where I also had it just memorized so that I didn't have to read it, and it just felt very off the cuff in the performance and everything. And I worked hard on that and was nervous in a way that I don't even get for stand up or anything. But yeah, everything, we read our vows, because you have no idea what kind of state you're going to be in. Yeah. Oh, another thing I would say, just if you go to a wedding, this is like a great back pocket thing to have. Even if you're not
switchblade,
some rope. even if you're not going to be in the wedding and it's not expected of you in any capacity, have something tight and polished and sentimental that you want to say about the bride and groom. Because I've been to so many weddings where all of a sudden they just open the floor up and they're like, does anybody want to say anything about the bride and groom? And if you have something that's like polished in that moment, no one's expecting that, and they need it, because so many people are just like stumbling through it.
I have never been to a wedding where they just opened the floor to the peasants.
Yeah, it's
what a move.
Like, makes me nervous every time.
What are you hoping to get?
I don't know. It's usually not. It's at a different moment. Like, the speeches are done, and now everyone's like eating, and like dancing is going to start soon. And they're like, well, we got this other time to fill while everyone's eating. Is there anyone else who wants to say anything to the bride and groom? This also happened at a bachelor party, by the way, to me.
Yeah.
Where they were like, we all sat down at this picnic table one night, and they're like, all right, does everybody have something they want to say to Adam? And they just went around this table, and I'm just like not listening to a word anybody else says, because I'm thinking, okay, here's your intro. Then you're going to dive into this first paragraph. Okay, you could do this, Soren. It's like writing it in my head. But yeah, if you have something locked and loaded, even if you don't say it then, if it's something tight, then when you are saying goodbye to the bride and groom, or when they come to sit at your table, you say it to them then. And as long as it's not like, you know, I remember the time you two first met, and like a long preamble, but just something.
Yeah.
You have to feel it out. But if you have something like that, you can become the hero of the wedding.
Man, that's terrifying. I mean, that's so good to know, because I feel like if I had a wedding tomorrow and someone just like opened it up and pointed to me, I would just go back to everything I'd ever done in stand up. And see if, like, let's see if I can segue from their relationship
to the time I got hit by a taxi.
To this one story. It was like, oh man, this couple is great. It's really, it's the perfect combination of two amazing things, like Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny. You guys know how Space Jam? That's pretty funny when you think about it. If let's just unpack that. What do you think that pitch meeting was like? What do you think the Space Jam pitch meeting was like? That's what I think of when I think of this couple.
Well, this has been a great night. I can't wait to see these two couple, for them dance their first dance. Also their last dance. Hey, speaking of the last dance.
Last dance!
That Michael Jordan.
So 98. Does it get better than that?
And then also, I think there's also, if you're allowed to get super drunk at a wedding, I think people always say, like, you know, be respectful and don't get too drunk. No, you kind of want somebody at your wedding who's like blasted out of their mind. Like, as long as they're not destroying things, it's kind of fun, because it means that people are letting loose, and that's what you want at your wedding.
Yeah, I feel very lucky that I've never been to a wedding where like something horrible happened. No one's ever gotten so drunk that they've ruined anything.
Yeah.
Like, I know that's a movie and sitcom trope, about something really dramatic happening because someone gets drunk and emotional, but I've only had good times at weddings.
Yeah.
It's on the car ride home alone where where the movie really happens.
Yeah. I don't think I have either. I think things have always been pretty tame with the weddings I've gone to. I've been to one elopement, and that was weird. But other than that, It's all been pretty cool.
Like my parents told me a story they went to where a story of a wedding they went to, rather, where the groom smushed cake in the bride's face, but it was clear that they hadn't discussed it previously. And then the two just did not talk for the rest of the evening.
That's pretty good. It's a fight between the bride and groom.
It seems like the one of the easier to avoid conflicts. Because you're planning a wedding together. And it's like, and now at this point they're gonna have us do the cake thing. What should we do? Should I smush it in your face? Or should I just, you know what? I'll come up with something on the day.
Yeah.
I'll surprise you.
See how it feels. I'm gonna play it by ear. I've been to a wedding before where the next morning some people had all stayed in one hotel room together and somebody in that hotel room had peed in their bed. Mm-hmm. Because they were so drunk. And they were all kind of like laughing about it. And then the bride said to the groom, should I tell them or should you? And the groom had done the exact same thing that night. Had gone back to the wedding bed and peed in it by accident.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Is that a fun story for the future or no? Okay, that's
I think it has been. It's proven to be. But at the time, it was like, well, that's ominous. I don't think that's good.
Soren, we've talked a lot about weddings. Are you comfortable with how much of your personal life has been shared in this episode?
Yeah, we didn't actually do a ton. We didn't say where it was or anything like that. And the stuff that I'm giving out is, I think, only helpful to people.
Yeah. I mean, people know where it is because I've been selling, like, they do those maps to the stars. I've been doing for anyone who wants to do, like, the crack.com national tour of important landmarks.
Oh, it's so depressing.
Yeah, it sucks. And it's so expensive. It's so expensive for no payoff.
You get like one person every 3 months. He's wearing a tuxedo t-shirt and his mom dropped him off.
Yeah.
To come to it.
There are people who are like at the after hours diner and then several states later, several days later, haggard and overgrown facial hair at your wedding venue. And they're like, were you here when Soren got married? And like, who's Soren? Who the fuck are you? Get out of my town. I'm like, okay, now we're going to go off to Calgary where they did Comic-Con once.
This is where Dan interviewed Stan Lee. Wow. This is where it happened. It's good. I mean, it's all rodeo grounds now, obviously, but you can picture it. I think weddings is a good topic for this one. I don't think I need to ask you another question.
Yeah, there's not much left to do, but have me track down the social accounts, which I can do in a minute. It's just going to take me... I'm a little bit more frazzled than usual because this was the day that we're recording this, which is July 30th, 2020. It was kind of a big news day. Former presidential candidate Herman Cain died of coronavirus today. Soren, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's sad when anybody... dies, particularly of this pandemic, because you don't know who's going to be next. It could be somebody on your team. So it's a sad day, but you got to look on the bright side of these types of things, a silver lining. He had lived a long life.
He was. You say that, how old was he?
72, I think.
Nope.
74? He's in his 70s. So... he's in the twilight of his career. Twilight of his life, I should say. His career. I think his career was like being a businessman and owning a restaurant. What?
We should probably take this back.
I don't know what Herman Cain did. He was a businessman, wasn't he?
Yeah, he owned a pizza place.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. I wasn't wrong. It's sad, and you obviously you feel for his family, but what an awesome big life he got to live. He got to be a presidential candidate, and only a handful of people in the entire United States can say that. And he got to do some things that other people never had a chance to do. And one of those cost him his life. He went to Tulsa, and he...
We shouldn't do this. We should. I should come up with something else.
Good God.
Yeah. Let's keep it all.
Okay. Then we're going to keep every second of it, and you can find out more from us on Twitter. You can find the show on Twitter at QQ underscore Soren and Dan, or you can find Soren at Soren underscore LTD. Or me at DOB underscore INC. You can find us on Instagram, QQ underscore with underscore Soren underscore and underscore Daniel. You should hire our favorite person in the world, Gabe Harder, at GabeHarder.com. We also have a Patreon. You could support the show that way, or you can, as always, support the show by engaging with our sponsors and using the promo codes that we provide. Or even more, as always, you can support the show by telling your friends to download it and listen to it. That's what we want. Most of all, I think that's it.
Great. See ya.